All right, let me jump on over here to the Right Side Way monologue. And I got to ask this question when I start off. Have you ever been around someone who claimed to be something that they weren't? Like they're just posers, just posturing for the moment, trying hard to portray themselves as something to fit their personal needs or their agenda, but they're really just kind of awful at it. And it's like painful to watch. And unfortunately, sometimes the posers create actual pain for everybody else. Like I remember once when I was a young officer assigned to the 20th Special Forces Group, we had a guy show up, report for duty from another of the Reserve Special Forces units. He was moving here from West Virginia, he said, to Alabama. Yay! He had been a member of the 19th Special Forces Group, he said. His uniform was basic, but he appeared to be what he said he was. He wore Staff Sergeant stripes. He had basic jump wings. He had a Special Forces tab on his shoulder. He knew all the right words. He claimed to be an 18 Delta, which is a Special Forces combat medic. And y'all, 18 Deltas are hard to come by. They're like unicorns. It takes an incredible amount of time to get somebody through the SF medic course. So when you have one walk in your door saying he's fully qualified, asking for a job, the short answer is typically yes. Now, I'll say this. For all of you out there listening right now that are younger than the age of 40, there was actually a day when we used this thing called paper. And we didn't have emails. And we actually had this giant thing called a phone book where you had to look up somebody's phone number, which, by the way, went to a landline phone that sat on someone's desk, and you had to hope they were actually at the desk to take the call when you called. So yeah, in those days, communication could take a bit longer. And when somebody transferred from one military unit to another, they had to have their file compiled, reviewed, processed, and then mailed by snail mail to the next gaining unit. So this guy who walked in the door with all the right badges and the qualifications, he said his file was on the way, and the unit let him start training. But then weird things would happen. There were times he didn't seem that proficient. There were times he didn't come across being as, you know, tactically sound as the others. And then someone began to take note that whenever we had a parachute jump that he was just not around. Something wasn't adding up. Well, then came that day we had a makeup jump scheduled at the last minute at Redstone Arsenal. It wasn't on the training calendar. It was added at the last minute, and the old boy showed up and immediately tried to say I got a bad ankle or something lame like that. But he was told, if you don't jump, you're going to be taken off of jump status altogether. So he shooted up, and he jumped. And while everyone else guided their way into the drop zone, this guy just floated off into the distance. Why? Because he had no idea what he was doing. He was a faker. He was a complete poser. He was Mr. Stolen Valor. He had no idea how to conduct an airborne operation. He just wanted to live the lie and get the notoriety, but he never wanted to do what it actually took to actually be that which he was claiming to be. And for 9 months, y'all, for 9 months, he trained and pretended and taught big talk, and then it all came crashing down to earth, like literally. But here's the thing. It was also really kind of a black mark on the unit. I mean, the unit took him in. They fell for it. In the eagerness to get another qualified SF medic, they adopted his lie without really checking it all out first, and by adopting the lie, it hurt the whole organization. Well, look, it's one thing to have someone like that lie to you, to pretend to be something so they can get something. It's quite another, though, when they're told they have to. Yeah, it's a whole different category of poser that is told to get out there and go pretend that you're something or someone so we can actually get something out of it, and it doesn't really fit. And what we're seeing right now in the Harris-Waltz campaign, y'all, it's an awful attempt to build up images that just don't fit reality. They are building an entire sector of their campaign for the presidency around the notion that young black men have to duty to vote for Harris, and that white dudes are all in for Harris, and that white chicks are like, oh, yay, this is the best thing since sliced bread. And what they're actually using to make this case are nothing but a bunch of race baiters and soy boys pretending to be something genuine and coming across as the cringiest batch of actors to ever hit the campaign trail. So start with this. A few days ago, the Democrats broke out Barack Obama. He hit the trail to make sure that the left knew that he was still the man, bebopping across the stage, high-fiving, being cool. Even though his hair has gone stone white, he still got out there and did all the cool talk and played the race card. Like, no fooling. You see, there's a real concern right now that the party of Uncle Joe, the pasty white guy who once said, if you don't vote for me, you ain't black, Well, the party of the Democrats, they've noticed the polls are showing their support among black voters is waning. Can't have that. Got to have some vote shaming now. Got to get the OG goat out there himself. So Obama stood in front of a group of black men and scolded them to their faces. Said he hadn't been seeing the energy from the brothers, he said, the brothers, about voting for Kamala. Don't they know she's a woman of color? She gets it. She knows life's hard. She's run the same streets, except she really hasn't. And oh, by the way, neither has he. Obama's an Ivy League graduate with mansions in the whitest of white areas like Martha's Vineyard. Harris is married to a white guy. But that's okay. The race baiters got a bait, even when they are not really what they pretend to be. And then there's white dudes for Harris. Ugh. An amalgam of white apologists who want the world to know how sorry they are for being born white and feeling that their penance should be that we must all turn our votes to Kamala Harris because it's just the right thing to do. When you're a white dude, I guess it's the right thing to do, they say. In the giant Zoom call that backfired with the general public, Pete Buttigieg told the world that, quote, men are more free when the leader of the free world supports access to birth control, said no real man ever. It went downhill from there. So much so that the Harris campaign has now tried in recent days to step up their game. Find some real men with some gravitas. Tell the world that real dudes are in. So they ran a commercial recently with men in the gym, men on the farm, men working on tractors. But they were saying things like, I can share my feelings. I can be emotional with my wife. The guy in the gym made sure we know that he can work out and still enjoy donuts. What? They went on to proclaim that they are not afraid of women. They want women to feel strong, empowered, and in charge of their own bodies. And the tiny boned man with the horse who looked like a good wind might blow him down, he posed with a Harris Waltz sign and proclaimed himself to be man enough to even help them win. Y'all, it was gross. It wasn't helpful. It was cringe. And oh, by the way, so what? People can be emotional with their wife and still recognize that Kamala Harris is a horrible candidate. And by the way, the word is out now that they were all actors. So, okay, soy boys unite. But look, it's no better on the female side with the identity politics scale being tipped in favor of Kamala Harris. White women for Harris is apparently another effort to co-opt the narrative. TikTok influencer Ariel Fodor recently hosted an online forum called White Women Enter the Call. And she kicked off the big Zoom call by advising her fellow white chicks to, quote, use their privilege to help out the sister of color. And then followed up by saying that they should all keep in mind that no white woman is ever to be caught correcting a black woman. I kid you not. Her actual quote was this. Here it is, quote, as a white woman, we need to use our privilege to make positive changes. If you find yourself talking over or speaking for BIPOC individuals or, God forbid, correcting them, just take a beat and instead put your listening ears on. Come on. So basically, the message here is that white women have had it good for far too long, and it's time they got on board with the BIPOC woman having her day in the Oval Office. And if they can't get on board with that, they can't be in the club. Okay, so what have we learned thus far with this campaign? Criticize Kamala Harris, you're racist. Doubt Kamala Harris, you're not really a man. Dislike Kamala Harris, you are privileged. Challenge Kamala Harris, well, you can't be in our club. I mean, here's my closing question. Where does this end? At what point are we going to stop with the race baiting and the fakers trying to pretend that something is something when it's not? I mean, should we next expect trannies for Harris? When do we get to see the separate Zoom call for Asians for Harris Waltz? Are they going to dare to have the illegal immigrants for Harris? You laugh, but just wait. Yeah, race baiters and soy boys. That's a sign of desperation in my view. It is unbecoming. It is fake. And we can all see it. And that's a wrap for The Right Side Way.